Presbyterian Fellowship here as we are here addressing the propaganda that is espoused, the human viewpoint perversion in regards to those of the last days, which is nothing new in history, in regards to saying peace and safety, in spite of the fact that the nation is under the judgment eye of God, ready to meet their demise otherwise, and negative volition is blind to the truth. They don't want to hear it, and there are false peace prophets that abound during these times, helping spread this campaign of human viewpoint and misinformation. And we saw it in regards to the southern kingdom of Judah and the book of Jeremiah. And they didn't learn their lesson from Israel, who some 135 years previous met their demise in the northern kingdom in 721 B.C. by Assyria in that regard, whereas Judah then were dispersed in 586 B.C. That is point 16, page 6 of our notes that we were looking at when we took our break. The recording for us there in regards to the northern kingdom and what occurred in 2 Kings 17. Look at some of these Old Testament passages here. Could read through them. During the time of the reign of Hoshea, in the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Elah, became king over Israel and Samaria, the northern kingdom, and reigned 9 years. Verse 1, verse 2, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord, only not as the kings of Israel who were before him, in regards to the kings that had their good, the bad, and the really ugly. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against him. And Hoshea became his servant and paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, who had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and offered no tribute to the king of Assyria as he had done year by year. So the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. He basically cowed down to Assyria and started paying taxes, if you will, tribute to them. And then he tried to renege in regards to that by assisting the help of Egypt, and got caught, and it was imprisoned. And at that point in time, verse 5, then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years, put it under siege. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile into Assyria, and settled them in Hala and Habor on the river of Gozan in the cities of the Medes, further north. And now this came about because the sons of Israel sinned against the Lord their God, who brought them up from the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And they had feared other gods. In other words, they got into religious reversionism and walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel, and the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. A good king would get rid of the religious reversionism within the country. The bad kings promoted it and encouraged it. And the sons of Israel did things secretly which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all their towns, whatever, from watchtower to fortified city, high places, or places of worship, religious reversionism, reversionistic type of worship, pagan worship. And they set for themselves sacred pillars and ashram on every high hill and under every green tree. And where there they burned incense on all the high places of the nations that did, which the Lord had carried away to exile before them. That's who they started praying to. That's your incense representation. And they did evil things, provoking the Lord. They served idols concerning which the Lord has said to them, you will not do this thing. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah through all his prophets and every seer, saying, turn away your evil ways and keep my commandments. That's his prophets and seers, not the false prophets. Turn from your evil ways, verse 13, keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, which I sent to you through my servants, the prophets. However, they did not listen, but stiffened their neck like their fathers. That syndrome of negative volition, stubbornness, obstinate, who did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant which he made with their fathers and his warnings with which he warned them. If you go this way, this is what's going to happen to you. Record for us in Deuteronomy. And went after the nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Lord had commanded them not to do like them. One of the basic sins is violation of doctrine of separation. So went after the nations around them. They started pursuing the negative cosmos. And they forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God, verse 16, and made for themselves molten images, or sacred cow, and references that we make. Even two calves made in Asherah, and worshiped all the hosts of heaven, and served Baal. Then they made their sons and their daughters pass through fire, even practiced child sacrifice. So, and practiced divination and enchantments, get into the cults, looking for the signs, astrology, all these other good things. The New Age movement, letting it infiltrate in regards to their beliefs. And sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him. I like the fact they sold themselves. See, what negative volition will do to satisfy and have what their STA wants to have. To satiate it. See, in an attempt. Obviously, it's never satiated. So the Lord was very angry, verse 18, with Israel, and moved them from his sight. None was left except the tribe of Judah. The northern kingdom, basically the lost 10 tribes of Israel, comes about causing this dispersion. Also, Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God. Verse 19, but walked in the customs which Israel had introduced. They didn't learn their lesson from this whole thing. So, watch God go in and walk over their brothers and sisters in the northern kingdom and take them and put them in captivity and destroy them. And they still sit there on their thumbs doing the same thing. Didn't learn a thing. And the Lord rejected, verse 20, all the descendants of Israel, and afflicted them and gave them into the hands of plunderers until he cast them out of his sight. When he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam, the son of Nebat king, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, king. Right. Inflection. And Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Lord and made them commit a great sin. The sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which they did. They did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from his sight. As he spoke through all the servants, the prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. You want to associate with these types. You want to incorporate all their human viewpoint, religious ideology, and evil into your lives. Well, fine, you go live with them. But you're not living my land. You'll not have fellowship with me. So, you'll not see my blessing. You want the world to bless you? Well, fine. And then, obviously, that means the influx of foreigners in regards to the land. Verse 24, and the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cathah and from Abba and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and settled them in the cities of Samaria and placed the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities. It came about at the beginning of their living there that they did not fear the Lord. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them which killed some of them. God controls the brain computers of animals. Wild animals. You need to be at peace with them by being at peace with the Lord. Or look out. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations whom you have carried away into exile into the city of Samaria did not know the custom of the God of the land, So he sent lions among them, and behold, they killed them because they do not know this custom of the God of the land. Just because God permitted them to overrun Israel didn't make them any more righteous. And they were just as evil. And the God who's ever in the land basically has a curse on them. They're not going to line up with his will. It's his land. It's his property. It's his real estate. And the people of the world think it's the people's real estate. Only according to God giving them possession. But ultimately it's his. It belongs to Jesus Christ. That's his inheritance. His real estate inheritance of being the king of Israel. His rightful inheritance that Nebuchadnezzar had tried to strip him from. And verse 27, so the king of Assyria commanded, saying, take there one of the priests whom you carried away into exile, and let him go and live there, and let him teach them the custom of the God of the land. So king of Assyria had a little smarts there. So, all right, well, we need to indoctrinate the people, see, accordingly. So one of the priests whom they had carried away into exile from Samaria came and lived in Bethel and taught them how that they should fear the Lord. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the houses of the high places which the people of Samaria had made every nation their cities in which they lived. The men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth, the men of Cuth made Nergal, the men of Hamath made Ashima. The Avites made Nibhaz and Tartak, and the Sepharvites burned their children in the fire to Adrammelech and Anemelech, the gods of the Sarabim. They also feared the Lord and appointed them from among themselves priests of the high places who acted for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods according to the custom of the nations from among whom they had been carried away into exile. This is a strange setting. These Gentiles that come in here, they're given the doctrine. And they reckon, this is a true God. But they're not willing to let go of their religious reversionism otherwise. So they had this whole approach in regards of having a fear of God because of what he would do to them if they disregarded him. But yet they would not let go of their religious reversionism otherwise in that respect. So he had this twofold religious reversionism along with at least acknowledging God for what he was. A real God. And verse 34, to this day they do according to their early customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances of the Lord, or the law, or the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he named Israel. If that's not a picture of the general population of the Arab nation today under Islam, they fear God. God, but it's not a true fear because they still hold on to their religious reversionism, see, and reject the God as we would know God under the Son of Jesus Christ in association with Jesus Christ, with whom the Lord made a covenant and commanded them, saying, you shall not fear other gods or bow down to yourselves to serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt with great power, with an outstretched arm, him you shall fear, and to him you shall bow yourself down, to him you shall sacrifice. The statutes and the ordinances of the law and the commandments which he wrote for you, you shall observe to do forever. You shall not fear other gods. The covenant that I made with you, you shall not forget, nor shall you fear other gods. But the Lord your God you shall fear, and he will deliver you from the hand of all your enemies. However, they did not listen, but they did according to their earlier custom. So while these nations fear the Lord, they also serve their idols, their children likewise, and their grandchildren, as their fathers did. So they do to this day. And we saw a picture in regards to the inhabitants of Samaria in the New Testament, the Gospel of John, in regards to the Jews of Judah looked down on the Jewish Samaritans, but they had a temple they worshipped. The question is, which is the greatest here in regards to the temple? Ask Jesus. And you see their whole ideology of mixing paganism, false religion, with Judaism, or as we say, true Christianity. And they're not adjusted. They're still negative. But yet you had this phenomenon, a phenomenon that we see exists today. And obviously, it's definitely more on the phase two part for us as Christians in regards to the world of denominationalism, etc. And hence the lukewarm scenario that's brought out. But anyway, it's interesting. Nothing new under the sun. The SCA, same old SCA, comes back with the same old ideas, just packaged in a different way. It's a human viewpoint packaged in a different way. No, we won't sacrifice your children through the fire. We'll just send them off as fodder to help us get richer and watch them get killed that way. Verse 17, neither did they take heed when Sennacherib of the Assyrians came to the very walls of Jerusalem. 2 Kings 18:17 and following brings that scenario to focus in the invasion of Judah. And this is all a warning, you know, on the doorstep. God gives a warning. He gives ample warnings. Still does no good. Then the king, 18:17, 2 Kings here. Then the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah of Judah with a large army to Jerusalem. So they went up and came to Jerusalem. When they went up, they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is on the highway of the fuller's field, or the launderer's field. When they called to the king, Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, came out to them. People in high political places in regards to Judah. And the Secretary of State, the recorder type of person, that, you know, a whole scenario of the political entourage, the king. And then Rabshakeh said to them, "Say now to Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria, what is this confidence that you have? You say that they are only empty words. I have counsel and strength for the war. Now on whom do you rely that you have rebelled against me? Now behold, you rely on the staff of this crushed reed on Egypt." Look at the Egypt. That's what the Jews would do in times of trouble. Rather than turn to God, they turn to neighboring nations trying to ally with them. "On which if a man leans, it will go into his hand and pierce it." In other words, these are words of derision in regards to Egypt, boasting how weak they are. And they'll do nothing but bring you pain. "So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who rely on him. But if you say to me, 'We trust in the Lord our God,' is it not he who has taken places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away and has said to Judah and Jerusalem, 'You shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem.' Now therefore come, make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria." "With my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give you 2,000 horses if you are able on your part to set riders on them." If you've got an army big enough. "How then can you repulse one official of the least of my master's servants and rely on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Have I now come up without the Lord's approval against this place and destroy it? The Lord said to me, 'Go up against this land and destroy it.'" That's a slap in the face. "Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and Shebna, and Joah said to Rabshakeh, 'Speak now to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it. Do not speak with us in Judean, in the hearing of the people who are on the wall.'" Now, on a private discourse, so keep it hidden from the normal everyday citizen. "But Rabshakeh said to them, 'Has my master sent me only to your master and to you to speak these words, and not to the men who sit on the wall, doomed to eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you?'" That's having lunch with the king of Assyria, I guess. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. 28. "Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in Judean, saying, 'Hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus says the king, do not let Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you from my hand. nor let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord shall deliver us, the city shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make your peace with me and come out to me, and eat each of you his wine, and each of his fig tree, and drink of his waters of his own cistern. I won't do anything to you, basically. Just stay on life. Just pay homage to me as you should, till I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards, and a land of olive trees and honeys, that you may live and not die. Prosperity for worldly prosperity for the prosperity God has otherwise provided. See, there's your, a good example of the temptation, the solicitation of letting the world bless you rather than let God bless you. Of getting your act back together in the land. The land is supposed to be a blessing, a land of honey, etc., in regards to the Jews. See, and his promise to them, these things, you know, all kind of stand out. That you may live and not die, as you would if you don't heed his words. But do not listen to Hezekiah when he misleads you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered his land from the hand of one king of Assyria? Look back on history, see what happened to your sister nation, you know, and all and a bunch of other nations. Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? You can see why Jonah didn't like these people. Referring back there doing that. But where are the gods of Sepharvaim, Hena, and Iva? Have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Who among all the gods of the lands have delivered the land from my hand? But the Lord should deliver Jerusalem from my hand. But the people were silent and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was, do not answer him. Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household of Shebna, the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn and told him the words of Rabshakeh. So, 18, like Israel, we today learn from history that we have learned nothing from history. This is exactly the same mentality that exists today, despite the fact that the Word of God explicitly states that those who reject His truth will come under His judgment. Again, Romans 1:18. There is a constant expression of God in opposition to manifest His wrath. That is, under the terms of Romans 1:18, for the wrath of God as temporal wrath, judgment, anger exposed or expressed in time, is revealed as present active iniquity, keeps on being revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and all unrighteousness of men. Caveat, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Those who do these things and seek to eliminate or void or silence the truth in regards to their actions, they especially come under God's wrath in this respect. All the things, all the people that promote human viewpoint, ideology, in our education system, our political system, and elsewhere. And they're seeking to tear down and beat down the truth of Bible doctrine as the sound of communicators proclaim today in regards to our nation and what prophecy says about it. That's they're full of it. They don't understand the scripture. No, whatever else they throw at you. Understand, God's wrath continually is revealed against them. Why you may not see it, it will happen. One way or the other, in regards to these times. You reject the truth, then you are on the bad side of God. And it's a terrifying thing to fall in His hands. So, 20, the common viewpoint among the masses is that God is not really as the Bible declares Him. He is not opposed to anyone. He would never do anyone harm. You know, again, how can a loving God do this? No, He's for everybody. Everybody's a child of God. That human viewpoint mentality. And He certainly agrees with our efforts, point 20. to clean up the planet and society by our own devices. You know, they're under the energy of the flesh. Don't worry about the moral fabric of society that, to that degree. We can be liberal. We can be free. God's for us. We're a Christian nation. Well, the Christian nation, we suck. I can guarantee you that. There is no F on the end of that. Because we really do. And we do not represent the doctrine in regards to our faith to clearly at all. Apart from a few voices that are standing up and saying these things in contradiction or in response to negative volition otherwise. And our own personal witnesses of life as well as local churches in that respect. And the evil, it's been into it, it's got a hold, and it's going full blast. There's nothing that's going to stop this train, this evil train. It's going to happen and take us to this country to its demise. So our alternative is for ourselves is not become a part of that, not get caught up in that. Keep our nose in the grindstone, keep our eyes focused on Bible doctrine and our own Christian life, and maximizing our SG3, the spiritual advance, all these things that are of issue. So you hear it all over the place. The fundies are some of the worst in regards to this. God, Jesus Christ is nothing but a sugar daddy. Loves everybody. This just shows their failure and contempt in regards to the language that God uses to manifest His word under terms of love. I'm willing to look it up to see what these words mean, etc. So, anyway. 21, various catastrophes, earthquakes, famines, epidemics, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, storms, etc. are not the judgments of God, as we know, but are merely, quote, Mother Nature, end quote, acting up, or, quote, Mother Earth, end quote, trying to warn us. What happened to Father God? It's always about Mama. It's about Mama because they reject authority. See, it all reflects them in the attitude. A rejection of God's authority. You know, Mother Earth. That's the Indian mentality. The Native American. That's carried over and is a threat in our society. You visit different places in the country and you see it brought out more in different areas. You go up in Colorado, that area, and you see this crap all over the place. Everybody into the, you know, the dream catcher stuff and all that other stuff. Give you any jokes on that? There you are, and even on the weather channels, I almost can't help but cringe every time a weatherman says that. Mother Nature, crap! Well, you're gonna bring it on us now. You know, here we go. It's always fun to look up the weather deal. You have one that says 86% chance of rain, one 30%, the other one zero, all in the same area. Like these people really know. But yet they'll get up and they'll appear like we're professionals. We know what we're doing. Okay. Alright, I've had enough fun with that. 22. Never in the history of mankind has a push for peace been as strong as has been over the last century. Last 100 years. It continues to build. Obviously, a good way to promote the propaganda is to create conflict and get enough people all wrapped around the axle over that. And we want peace. 23, the peace campaign in our nation has been active at all levels of government since as early as the establishment of the United Nations in 1945. And as we know from history, it even goes back to 1919 and the League of Nations, which at that point in time, there's enough people still in our political circles had enough common sense that no, we'll not be part of this unification of nations. But it didn't stop the one worlders from keep plugging away. In 1945, they started to have their way under the United Nations. 24. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy presented his plan for national disarmament called, quote, Freedom from War, end quote. The United States program for general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world. The three-stage program for the gradual transfer of U.S. arms to the U.N. How far back have we had one-worlders in our government? Well, probably a lot further back than what we want to give credence to. Maybe all the way back to Washington. So, there's an irony for you. The satanic scheme, bringing in some people from the Reformation era that break away from Catholicism. Probably a lot of these were believers, some of them may not be. But building up and providing the foundation for a foundation of freedom of religion, our country. It is a great thing. Except it obviously, it can go two ways. It provides the opportunity for anybody, whatever they want to believe, to live here and worship that way. On the other end of the coin, it also provides a platform for an environment for the Philadelphia type of churches to manifest themselves and progress and multiply. And you had the period of the Philadelphia period that extends from a society like ours, independent churches. See. The irony, the sophistication of satanic scheming in the world. People wonder, well, our early fathers, a lot of them were Masons. Yeah, they're evil. But yet, you know, they're great. Well, doctrine gives you the right perspective. And that just brings about the culpability that was brought upon our country. And the fact that probably religion was not sufficient throughout the entire history of the country to overrule the evil part of freedom of religion in regards to its infiltration and impact in regards to our government and circles. So that is a balanced look and a correct look in regards to this disadvantagement of our nation. So, anyway. John F. Kennedy, a lot of people look to him and he's a good, you know, he's a great president. I've heard people say, he's our last great president. Well, trust me, they're all tapped into the one world order. They're all being influenced in that regard. Transfer our arms to the United Nations. 25, in addition to these sorts of activities, and I won't even get into FDR at this point in time. In addition to these sorts of activities, our nation is continually engaged in negotiation, trade, treaties, etc., with those that are about enemies under the foolish notion that we will change the natures of those nations. In other words, the food and money for peace approach. Attack them, give them money, and they'll help us. All right. They use it, and they'll build up their armament and nuke us out of here one of these days. The major country, Russia. 26, the peace propaganda in our time will continue to escalate to its zenith in the early part of Daniel's 70th week, right up to the point of its first major catastrophe, that is the destruction of the U.S. by Russia and its allies. Prophecy with respect to prophetic Babylon, which is code for the United States, is brought out throughout the Old Testament, as well as we read Revelation 18 as of recent Old Testament passages. Just as a review here, Isaiah 13. The oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw, the prophet Isaiah, lift up a standard on the bare hill, mountain hill representative of nation here is a bare one, windswept. Raise your voice to them, wave the hand that they may enter the doors of the nobles, those who have prestige and power. I have commanded my concentrated ones. I have even called my mighty warriors, to my proudly exulting ones, to execute my anger, his wrath, a sound of tumult on the mountains among the nations, like that of many people, a sound of the uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathered together. The Lord of armies is mustering their army for battle. They are coming from a far country, from the farthest horizons. Essentially, the north. The Lord is instruments of indignation. God uses nations as whip nations, bring disciplines upon other nations, to destroy the whole land. Well, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will fall limp. Every man's heart will melt. You can imagine if he was around and all of a sudden it's been broadcast on the news. 60-some missiles have been fired by Russia, Iran, and maybe others, towards our country. They're inbound. You got about 30 minutes. You tell me how limp your hand wouldn't get, among other things. Your heart wouldn't melt. See, what else can you do? Where it's going to land, it's going to land. I don't care what kind of response we would have if that is set off. We're done. We're bacon, pork. We're the unclean animal. Yeah, okay, that all fits. Therefore, all hands will fall limp, and every man's heart will melt, and they will be terrified. Pains and anguish will take hold of them. They will writhe like a woman in labor. This nuclear holocaust is going to occur. They will look at one another in astonishment. Their faces aflame. Wow. I can tell you what that looks like, if you'll permit me to tell you one little story. I used to do this trick with a lighter fluid. I'd blow it out of my mouth, light a match, and have a big ball flame. And I was in a college dormitory one time. Everybody wanted to see it. So I did it, shot it all the way across the room, lit up some toilet paper they had on a tile wall, and it came right back at me. I drowned in the mirror, looked, my face was all aflame. I was like, I held my breath. And after a couple of games of pool, I said, I think I'll go to the doctor, it hurts. But it wasn't that bad. But anyway, you do stupid things, and all of a sudden you just kind of recall it and go, oh, their face is aflame. I know that one. See what God will give you for a pastor. What? And they will be terrified, verse 8. Pains and anguish will take hold of them. They will ride like a woman in labor. They will look at one another in astonishment. Their faces aflame. 9. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, cruel with fury and burning anger, to make the land a desolation. And he will exterminate its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises. The moon will not shed its light. That's just from the debris and the smoke and everything from the fallout from the nuclear destruction. Thus I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. Also put an end to the arrogance of the proud and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. I will make mortal man scarcer than pure gold. During this period of history, the extermination of mankind in regards to numbers is unprecedented apart from the flood in regards to percentage of population on this planet. In mankind, then the gold of Ophir, which is, can't find that hardly at all. Therefore, I shall make the heavens tremble, and the earth will be shaken from its place at the fury of the Lord of armies, the day of his burning anger. And it will be that like a hunted, it will be that like a hunted gazelle, or like sheep with none together then. They will each turn to his own people, and each one flee to his own land. Everybody's rushing to get in this country. They'll be rushing to get out. Rushing. Hey, that's kind of funny. But anyway, everyone who is found will be thrust through. And anyone who is captured will fall by the sword. If you stay, if you don't get out, according to the warning that we see in Revelation, get out my people, and anybody else don't listen to us. You'll die. Their little ones also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered, and their wives ravished. Behold, I'm going to stir up the Medes against them. They will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. needs their reference to Persia, Iran. They're part of all this scenario. That's, you know, all the nuclear going on over there in regards to nations' concern. Well, it has a prophetic value to it. And their bows will mow down the young men, the catapults for their missiles. They will not even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. People of this ilk don't care. In Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Be a blight on this planet for then on out till the dissolution of this earth. They'll never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. Nor will the Arab pitch his tent there. Nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there. But desert creatures will lie down there. And their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches also will live there. And shaggy goats will frolic like there. And hyenas will howl in their fortified towers. And jackals in their luxurious palaces. It will become an unrestricted nature reserve. But man can't live here. And they already started a reserve down south in Ohio. If you ever wanted to go down see, it's called the Wilds. Anyway, I threw that in. Her faithful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. As Isaiah 13, chapter 21. The oracle concerning the wilderness of the sea. As windstorms in the Negev sweep on, it comes from the wilderness, from a terrifying land. A harsh vision has been shown to me. The treacherous one still deals treacherously, and destroys still destroys. Go up, Elam. Lay siege Media. Elam there, another reference to the Persian area, Hiram. Media is north in regards to this situation. It could be reference to northern Iraq, the Kurds. They lay siege. That looks at the oil. The Kurds in northern Iraq, they're the ones that really produce the real oil over in Iraq, by the way, if you didn't know that. They're a major player. And they lay siege. Looks at cutting off the pipelines, if that's what it refers to. Or it may refer to Turkey. Whatever might come out of that. But anyway, just interesting references here. I have made an end of all the groaning that she has caused. You know, the northern Kurds in southern Iraq don't really get along with one another, by the way, if you didn't know that. If you're over there, you probably know that. But they're different. For this reason, my loins are full of anguish. Pains have seized me like the pains of a woman in labor. I am so bewildered I cannot hear, so terrified I cannot see. My mind reels. Horror overwhelms me. The twilight I long for has been turned from me into trembling. They set the table. They spread out the cloth. They eat. They drink. Rise up, captains, oil the shields. For thus says the Lord to me. Go station the lookout. Let him report what he sees. When he sees riders, horsemen, and pairs, trained donkeys, trained camels, then pay close attention, very close attention. And all that might conjure up in regards to visual, it'd be fun to study that out, because it's obviously an indication of what's about to come about. Then the lookout called, O Lord, I stand continually by day on the watchtower, and I'm stationed every night at my guard post. Now behold, here comes a troop of riders, horsemen, and pairs. One answered, said, Fallen, fallen is Babylon. And all the images of her gods are shattered on the ground. Oh, my threshed people, am I afflicted to the threshing floor. What have I heard from the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, I make known to you. Chapter 47. Again, these have dual prophecy significance, and prophetic Babylon is involved in regards to this. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans. For you shall no longer be called tender and delicate. Take the milk, the sanctification of her being a queen. Take the millstones and grind meal. Remove your veil, strip off the skirt, and cover the leg, cross the rivers. Your nakedness will be uncovered. Your shame also will be exposed. I will take vengeance and will not spare a man. Our Redeemer, the Lord of armies, is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit silently and go into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans. For you will no more be called the Queen of Kingdoms. I was angry with my people. I profaned my heritage and gave them into your hand. You did not show mercy to them. On the age you made your yoke very heavy. And you said, I will be a queen forever. These things you do not consider nor remember the outcome of them. Again, references to Revelation 18. Our attitude in regards to Israel that will be adopted the last days is not good. On the age you made your yoke very heavy. This old people will get to pay and foot the bill. Yes. Now then, hear this, you sensual one, who dwells securely, who says in your heart, I am, and there is no one besides me. I shall not sit as a widow, nor shall I know the loss of children. No loss of children. But these two things shall come on you suddenly in one day. Loss of children and widowhood. They shall come on you in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries, in spite of the great power of your spells. And you felt secure in your wickedness and said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, they have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, I am, there is no one besides me. Plain God, see. But evil will come on you, which you will not know how to charm away. A disaster will fall on you, in which you cannot atone. And destruction about which you do not know will come on you suddenly. Stand fast now in your spells and in your many sorceries, with which you have labored from your youth, all the spells of the ideology and approach regards to our society and what is being promoted today. So people are under a spell of human viewpoint, and the solicitation of the STA. Perhaps you will be able to profit, verse 12b here, perhaps you may cause trembling. You are wearied with your many counsels, that now the astrologers, those who prophesy by the stars, those who predict by the new moons, set up to save you from what will come upon you. As presidents, presidents' wives have openly admitted that they look to astrologers for advice. Go crazy. Behold, they have become like stubble. Fires burn them. They cannot deliver themselves from the power of the flame. Again, the nuclear holocaust being visualized. There will be no coal to warm by this year, nuclear winter, nor a fire to sit before. So have those become to you with whom you have labored, who have trafficked with you from your youth. Each has wandered in his own way. There is none to save you. And we'll save Jeremiah passages until next class. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask by the Holy Spirit to be light and cease in you. In Jesus' name.